Welcome to Across the Margin, the podcast. I'm your host, Michael Shields. Across the Margin, the podcast is a proud member of the Osiris Media Group. Check out all their podcast offerings, all their live events, everything they got going on over at osirispod.com. In this episode, I present to you an interview with author Noah Silver, who was born in Jerusalem, raised between Scotland and Maine, and now resides in Berkeley, California. After receiving her BA in English and American Literature and Language from Harvard University, Noah lived and taught English as a second language on Namdrik, part of the Republic of the Marshall Islands and the smallest inhabited atoll in the world. She later completed her MFA in creative writing from San Francisco State University and then worked as an editor on various oral history projects, ranging from an archive documenting the partition of India and Pakistan to a cancer researcher telling the stories of trauma experienced by cancer survivors. Her debut novel, California Dreaming, the focus of this episode and a tremendous read, I must add, will be available everywhere on May 21st, 2024. In California Dreaming, we find Elena Berg, having grown up on stories of her mother's wild youth in California, relocating from New England to the Bay Area in 2011 for a placement as an English teacher with Teach for America. Once there, she's eager to inspire a love of poetry and literature in her diverse but underprivileged students. Her own grandfather, a Holocaust survivor, was a storyteller and teacher who touched the lives of his students for years to come. Elena's mother followed in his footsteps, leaving behind the hippie lifestyle of her 20s to become a university professor. But Elena quietly finds herself feeling disconnected from teaching, unable to inspire her students, and before long, she grows disillusioned with her career. Coming of age between the Occupy and Me Too movements and against the backdrop of the 2016 election and California's ever-worsening fire season, Elena reckons with California as she imagined it and California as it really is. As she does so, she must also ultimately reconcile the person she envisions herself to be with the person she actually is. California Dreamin' is a robust debut in literary fiction. It is an earnest story that encourages readers to think about how we make meaning in our lives, and how the stories we tell ourselves influence the ways in which we see the world and our place in it. It's truly a beautiful book, super thought-provoking, and you can learn more about it in this interview with Noah Silver.
Across the margin. Across the margin. Across the margin. Podcast.
I really, really love the book. I'm excited to talk about it. There's a lot of cool themes and ideas in it. Lots of different stuff to chew on there. It's great.
Yes.
So is it fair to kind of just, would it be fair to call California Dreamin' your love letter to the state of California? It really had a lot of heart and a lot of passion for California in it.
Yes. Yes, I think so. I've been calling it that too. Love letter to the Bay. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, you know, it's beautiful too. Just, you know, I love nature and the outdoors a whole lot. I love the way you romanticize nature in it. There's the way Elena experiences California. You know, we see the trees breathing in Mount Tom, which is a fun section. I see, you know, plums were described as little red jewels. What does nature, and particularly the nature of, the natural environments of California mean to you?
Oh, I love that question. And and thanks for pulling that out. I personally feel alive in nature in a way that I don't in other places and in urban spaces too. I think the soul expands in nature and around the natural world. And there's a sense of, for me anyway, a way of not feeling so separate anymore, which does a lot for the nervous system too, of just, bringing it down, relaxing it, coming back into, and for me, it's often coming back into alignment with what feels most true and most important for me, like a deep breath. Mm-hmm. And California is epic in its nature, and it has this expansive, there's so much expansion. Like there's the coast and the ocean and the waves, and but there's also the trees and the woods and the redwoods, and yeah. things are both big and can be loud. I was just on a beach this weekend and standing in front of the ocean, and the waves were crashing and it was loud, but it can also be so quiet. Yeah.
California is so special in that way. I mean, not only I'm actually an arborist, one of the things I do. And so I love trees, and they have some, they have the oldest trees in the world. They have the biggest trees in the world.
Yeah.
I did live out there for a little bit, and it was just magical. I lived in Southern California. I could be in the beach in just the morning, and then I could be snowboarding in the afternoon. Like, you know,
right.
It's really, it's really magical. So I need to know moving forward, how much of Elena is, how much of you is in Elena? Because it's it was wild how authentic it felt. It felt like I was reading a memoir at times, and it just felt so real. And I was wondering, you know, how much you connect to that character, how much of yourself you put into the character.
Yeah, also, I think fiction is always true, actually. And there's a lot of me in her. But there's also a lot of me in all the other characters, actually, because they all come out of me. And they're all kind of emanations of me, I think, and me relating to the world. But she's not me. She is not me. And there are the sort of these ways that like the tangents kind of, it could start in the root of a truth, but then it goes off in its own direction. And she became her own person for sure through the process.
Was you have to be as much of a bookworm as her though, because I just love
books. You know,
I was always making notes of like all the books in there, and it was just, it must have been fun to kind of include those kind of nods to these books that kind of shaped you throughout your life and as you grew with them. That was fun to put in there, isn't it?
Yeah, it definitely. Yes, I mean, I love poetry. I love books. I wonder how many. I would be curious how many. You know, authors write about people who love to write or people who love to read. But yes, it was a beautiful process for me to kind of gather up these influences, literary loves of mine, and get to kind of explore it in the novel world.
Yeah, it was cool. I almost made it like an interactive experience where I was like reading some of the poems, whether it's, you know, the fish and stuff as you're going through.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna pause and read that poem, and it made it fun. It brought it to life a little bit.
Cool.
One of the biggest themes in the book is kind of a change, and there's multiple ways you kind of address it, and it's really relatable and deep. But can you talk to them about what you're saying in the book about you know, what we see as our place in the world as when we are younger versus kind of the reality that you come upon, we get later in life, that hit me, you know, and I'm sure it's going to hit a lot of people when they read it. It's like you expect one thing, you got this ideal vision of what you want to be, what the world is, and all of a sudden you're like, wait a second.
So, right.
But what were you saying in the book about that?
Yeah. So I think I really wanted to explore this idea of the stories we inherit. And, you know, Elena has stories coming at her from all sides. She has the story of California, but then there's also a story of teaching, and there's a story of her mother and her grandfather, and all of these different stories kind of collect in us, I think, especially as, you know, when we're kids and haven't yet gone out to reckon with those stories in the face of, and I think part of what she's trying to do is figure out which of these stories are mine and which of these stories feel true to me still, and also then what's my story. Like, she's trying to write her own story, and I think a lot of the ways we write our own story is in some ways by investigating the stories we've been handed and seeing whether they still feel real and or true or accurate or relevant to us in this moment.
Wild, like the wake-up call a lot of us can get in different ways. We'll talk a little bit about it up, but the pragmatic reality of teaching. But I love the that story of the ship of Theseus, of his ship, and then later on he talked about a violin and changed what it means. You talk, there's that like your grandmother Elena's, I'm not gonna say yours, like, grandmother kind of looking in the mirror, and there's a lot of fun alludes to change. But also you talk about not just a personal change, but a change in California, what you imagined it, what she imagined it to be as you went and how it continues to change. Did you have that experience personally when you went to California and you thought it might be something else, and then it was? And then also we see it changing a lot too, that that Elena discusses later in the book. So California changing itself was a big part of the book.
And I had a similar, well, let's see. I definitely experienced, I mean, I've lived here 13 years. So I've experienced, I came out here with a lot of people. A lot of my friends in college used to say to me, like, you should be in Berkeley. You belong in Berkeley. And so I kind of had this idea in my head of, I don't exactly know what that means, but it must mean something about me. Like, I belong there, Berkeley. And there was a lot of kind of, for me, a reckoning of like, what were people projecting onto me versus projecting onto California, and how do I relate to place? Which I was also excited to explore for Elena in this novel world of how does place interact with our sense of self, and how do we get changed by it? But in terms of, yeah, in California changing, I mean, for me being here in the last 13 years, I remember when the fire seasons really started to impact us in Berkeley, when the smoke filtered out, came out, and when and the orange skies and the masks, and that wasn't true when I first came out here. And same with the drought. You know, when I came out here, I remember like getting my hair cut and talking to a hairdresser of like, "There's only been dr I've only known drought. I've only known drought, and it's only now that we're coming out of drought."
I'll never forget my first sky from like one of the when I was I like I said I was in Southern California, and one of the first fires I experienced out there, when it was literally like raining ash, and I've never seen anything like it, but
I
always
know.
gave me that apocalyptic look. It's kind of eye-opening. You don't even think things like that happen until you experience it. I love early in the book how someone describes the city as in terms of layers, one generation after another, living and dreaming and drinking on top of each other, each layer setting the stage for the next. That's beautiful. I think about it, I'm in Brooklyn in New York, and same type of thing. It's a lot there. I loved Elena's grandfather so much. Him talking about poetry being necessary, poets being dangerous. What was the inspiration there? Like, he's such a cool character.
I really love I love when intergenerational connection happens. And I think it doesn't happen as much as it could or we wanted to. And I've had different grandparent figures in my life who all have who've all influenced me in different ways. And I wanted to have that strength of character, that strength of a person who is not just like the bumbling grandparent we see and once a year that we kind of have to do our duty to, but someone who's really alive in Elena's life, that who really is present in her way of thinking and her way of being.
Deeply inspired. I mean, I always see, I have a daughter, and it was always strange to me just how intense the grandparent bond with their grandkids can be. It just like happened. They barely knew each other, but they knew there was something super special there. It was fun to watch. And reason I just love the grandfather, and he just the way he talks about music. There's one line: "Music takes off where language fails. Listening to greats can make you feel as though you're remembering something you had once known, intimately but forgotten." Like I just found that beautiful. A lot of people who listen, who are authors, when I have authors on, they love to hear about the process, about your writing process. It's a step back. And it's just fun to hear. I think it's fun to hear too, just how different people approach it when they get it done, when they get their writing done. But kind of,
Totally.
do you have any thoughts on your process that you can share with us?
Well, I have two daughters as well, and they are both under five. And I so my process is has really grown in concert with parenting two very, very small children. Which fun, I mean, for me has worked strangely well. I think like the way of the pace of being with tiny people was actually for me quite conducive to a pace of writing. It's very
Wow, you don't always do
present.
that. That's great.
No, and it wasn't what I was expecting. But yeah, I found early on that my whole pace slowed down when I was with my kids, and it was, I also felt bored and frustrated and all the feelings, but I felt pretty present and mm-hmm. watching the way that they, that toddlers walk through the world, and, you know, one leaf can last for an hour of interest. Yeah. And that I found that that quality of attention, when I could cultivate it with them, that it also translated to my writing. Now, that being said, I couldn't write when they're around. So yeah. a lot of writing happened during nap times, in the evenings. I wrote this book mostly through the pandemic also, and we did have, thank goodness, a ton of grandparent and auntie and uncle help. But my process really takes inspiration also from Anne Lamott. She has this practice in her book, Bird by Bird, called the 1-inch picture frame. And she says, just pretend like you have a 1-inch picture frame and just write what you can see through that.
Wow.
And that's what I tried to do.
That simplifies it in a cool way.
Yeah, right. Tried to write like 250 words a day. I did that for 2 or 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a book at the end, yeah, or a first draft anyway. Yeah.
Here we have one of my favorite parts of the book was the letters back and forth about nostalgia.
Yeah.
Learn about nostalgia, and then like I love the idea of thinking in the past, and I think the power and beauty of nostalgia sometimes. But then you kind of get to the later in the book, and she's kind of like thinking back about her time in the city, and, you know, almost wishing, while thinking about who was the person that underlined that part of the book, and just kind of like the other side of nostalgia. It can be tough, but I mean,
yeah.
Do you have any thoughts about the power of nostalgia both ways as represented in the book?
Yeah.
That part's cool though. That letter back and forth is so.
The letter, yeah.
I don't think I've heard that story about the origins of nostalgia.
Those Swiss mercenaries. Yeah.
Yeah. That's great.
I think there's a lot of romanticizing that Elena does, and that feels resonant for me with early 20s also. And I think nostalgia in some ways is part of that, that there's the romantic part of nostalgia, which when we're in it allows us to, there's kind of like a sweetness to it, even as it can sometimes be painful, of memory and recalling and going back into. But I think what happens to her when she, you know, this kind of, this sharper edge of nostalgia that happens later in the book. I think a lot of that has to do with where she feels in herself at that moment.
Yeah.
You know, when nostalgia, when we're in nostalgia, but content in our place in the moment, then I think she discovers that it's quite sweet and enjoyable, even in there's a sad tinge to it, maybe. But when she's not feeling at ease in herself or content or stable or settled in where she is in the moment, then nostalgia becomes this tug and pull and painful of you know, how did I get here? And what ifs start coming up.
Exactly. Right? Start seeping in.
Yeah.
Being a teacher in this book and kind of dealing with Elena being a teacher, kind of going back and forth between idealizing and not, but also what was interesting and fun too, there was a lot of great teaching advice as you go through thoughts on teaching, which I thought were cool. There was the showing the kids how the author shows you instead of tells you. The importance of trust in teaching was brought up. The idea of representation in teaching mattering, that came up. Not being caught up in your own story was another piece. How long were you teaching, and was it interesting to, you know, discuss the idea of teaching and what you've learned through the years in this book?
Yeah, I taught full time just for 1 year, and I taught in the Marshall Islands after college, and it gave me a lot of pause, actually, of understanding.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, just really reckoning with, here's me and here real people, real students in front of me, and not just my ideas of them and not just my ideas of the things that I think are interesting, but how do we all interact together? But then my husband taught for many, many years. So I also got to see a greater development, let's say, of a teacher over the course of time. And I think teaching, I think there are ways when we feel like we're subject experts that sometimes we make assumptions like, therefore I can teach. And yeah. There's so much involved in teaching as a practice, as an art, mm-hmm. that I discovered that mm-hmm. that is its own, its own modality that we need to stand in, and not just the subject that we're interested in.
Totally. Yeah. The idealism of going in, I'm going to spark these kids to, I have to wrangle them in and learn all the different pragmatic ideas, the whole mm-hmm. thing. But that journey was a really, really cool part. When you were teaching for that 1 year, did you have an Anna, that one teacher, the one student? I thought Anna was great. I love that she kind of found her one time, but then it kind of got tragic. We won't go into it. I want to keep parts out for the readers, but there's, having that
I didn't have an Anna, no. But I definitely had different students who felt sometimes felt like my allies in the classroom when I could see that I was struggling, and I felt like these kids are like doing me a favor here.
They got my back.
Yes, exactly.
A lot of recent American kind of history and trauma was in the book. I don't want to go into it too much, but going over the kind of reliving the election was tough. I always find that tough. Yeah. A lot of trauma built up in myself for that, and hopefully mm-hmm. do that again. But Occupy was a big part of it too. And I was just curious, why did you find it important to put Occupy in it, in the story, or what it meant to you, or kind of any of the other pieces of it kind of made me realize, and I'm sure anyone who lives throughout time thinks this, but kind of highlights how remarkable or interesting a time period we live in. It was interesting. But
there's a part of the book where Elena remembers one of her college professors saying something like, we live in context literature. And I think that was part of what I was trying to explore. Like, what does it mean to actually live in context, in place and in time? And I once heard a story about the book The Chosen, which is a book about a ultra Orthodox Jewish boy. Mm-hmm. And I heard that people wrote to the author afterwards from all walks of life saying, this book was about me. And this book was about an ultra Orthodox family and was very specific in time and in place. But somehow that specificity allowed for these universal concepts to kind of like ring out.
That's a lot of people.
And and I felt really interested to explore what does it mean to be in time and in place and in context. And it relates to all these stories. I think for Elena especially, you know, she came out with these stories of like romanticized activism and what does it mean to march. And like I saw, you know, she saw whatever she saw, like a 3-minute snippet of people marching in 1967 or something. And it built up this image for her. And I wanted her to explore a march and to see what's a movement and what does it mean to relate to a movement in this time and not in that time. And to really feel all of the like the actualities of that moment. Yeah. And not just the vision of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I'm sure a lot of us growing up wanted to be part of something as big
than
ourselves, like we would see in old videos or hear about, and mm-hmm. kind of coming to life is pretty interesting to explore. It's beautiful how the ideas that are talked about with poetry, because I think poetry is so important, and kind of that idea when she was talking to you know, one of our principals or overseeing how you don't understand the privilege that is poetry. I'm sure talking about it, you must personally really believe in the power of kids learning poetry and having poetry in their life. Is that correct?
I do. Oh, yes. Yeah.
It's really, really everything. But I love the book. I love all the themes in it.
Thank you.
It's super, super relatable. I mean, just the coming of age and kind of coming to terms, but you know, what is real about the world. And you know, mm-hmm. some of these are hard truths, and it's cool to explore it in a way. I really, really love, and I'm going to leave this for the reader once they get the book, you know, reorder it now. But when Elena speaks to the classroom towards the end of the book, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Really, really.
Thank you.
Really well done. I love that. So the book is great. I'm glad to spread the word about it. So I'm glad to talk about it with you today. So thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
This podcast is In the Loop, the Legion of Osiris podcasts. Osiris is creating a community that connects people like you with live experiences and podcasts about artists and topics you love. Get in the loop at osirispod.com.